Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm here again with a repeat guest, the part four of our very extensive conversation on language development, Cindy McEnroy, speech and language therapist and expert on young children and their language needs and development and concerns and all of those things, and former colleague at Fraser of mine for, we've known each other for over 30 years, and it's just been so much fun to talk with you. Very enlightening, because you are a wealth of knowledge. You always have been. And I'm looking forward to this conversation, Cindy, because we're going to talk about strategies. Strategies to really foster that healthy communication development that we all want children to master in these early years. So welcome, Cindy McEnroy. Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. And it has been fun. Thanks for all the listeners for hanging on until section four. And
yeah. So let's jump in. What can we do when there's concerns and things, you know, and we're spending time with these children who are frustrated because they're not able to process things in the way that the world is expecting them to? And how can we handle that? And what can we do as professionals supporting them or as caregivers, as parents, as families, grandparents? Sure.
First, it's always important to know that, you know, communication happens all the time. Every behavior, and I know in your other podcasts you've done about managing behaviors and things, that every behavior is a form of communication. We just have to figure out the what it is they're communicating, the why, and how we can help get through there. And sometimes that's giving them words to it. Always important to know, though, that in the heat of emotion, the biggest of behavior, that's when words can't be found. When kids are in that red hot emotional state, there aren't words. We got to get them calm first, and then we can give them words to what had just happened, or try to give them words. But I like to say sometimes we just lovingly drive our children to frustration. So it's starting off with is that you reward all attempts at communication, all attempts to communicate, you reward them all. So if it's a gesture, you're like, oh, I see your hand is showing me juice. You're telling me you want juice. Juice. And then there, they've got three words. We provided it to them for an opportunity to imitate. If they do, great. If they don't, that's fine, because they communicated by showing us what they wanted. When I vocalize with that thing, if I'm just reaching, I'm just like, or I'm starting to whine, I'm starting to cry, I hear your voices telling me you want to be all done. You can tell me, all done. All right, we're all done. I only ever ask three times of a child to try and to say what it is that I've modeled for them. Because like I just said, after three times, we lovingly drive them to frustration. If they're going to imitate it, they're going to do it in those three times. And it just takes that little tiny snippet of time to be able to imitate. Looking through books. Books are wonderful. Simplify them. Tell the story. And then read the story, but tell it first, because that's those easy, short words about a basic thing about a picture is the language the kid is going to remember and that they're going to be able to try and tell back to you. Books are wonderful to be read, but sometimes even books that are designed for little kids, too many words.
Yes.
There's a reason children love brown bear, brown bear.
Yes, exactly.
There's a few words. It has a pattern. It's predictable. It's repetitious. It's also why they like flap books. Flap books tend to not have very many words, and you find the pictures. And that's why even kids at 4 years old still remember wanting to go back and reading Goodnight Moon and Brown Bear.
Yes.
And then you share those books again. And when you're sharing books that are older, again, read it, but ask questions in between. Ask introspective questions like, what do you think is going to happen when we turn the page? What would you do if this happened? Or change up the story. Same with Brown Bear, Brown Bear. Sometimes if you're going to recite it and you're not doing the book, recite it back, do it in a different order. Start with Red Horse, Red Horse, because that's how I learned flexible language and that not all things have to be the same in the same order all the time. Sing a song and then use that same tune and make it do whatever. We're washing the dishes today. We're washing the dishes today. You know, change it into new words. because it's the tune they know, but it's fun, and that makes language fun. And the only reason I want to communicate with people as a little person is because it's fun. I want to initiate and communicate with you because I like communicating with you. If it is hard work and it's frustrating, I am just not going to want to talk that
Yes. Much. Oh, that's such a good point, Cindy. I am so glad you said that. And I love the reminder of three tries, because it just gets to be this really tense and overwhelming situation if you push.
Right. Yeah. And then you have, it's literally performance anxiety.
Yeah.
And so ways, other ideas too, are to always offer choices. Because so when you ask an open question, you know, what do you want for snack? That's perfect. That's a perfect start, because we want them to be able to come up with spontaneous responses when they can. Yeah. But if they can't, then choices provide them with something to imitate. There's some groundwork there to ask and to move from. So what do you want for snack? No answer. Do you want Teddy Grahams or an apple? And then still no answer. Like, oh, do you want Teddy Grahams or an apple? And if they don't, oh, I think we're going to do Teddy Grahams. You know, as they get older, notorious fours that want to change the rules of the game. You say sure. Teddy bears. You say teddy bears or an apple, and they say chocolate Cheetos. Chip cookie. Yeah, Cheetos, good one. And you're like, so then the once why I go, well, that's not an option. Teddy bears or Teddy Grahams or an apple, and they say Cheetos again, and you're like. You know what? By yourself or with my help, we're going to have Teddy Grahams or an apple. And then they say Cheetos. I think for today, are you showing me you need my help? We're going to eat Teddy Grahams. Mm-hmm. And you may have a sort of disrupt, but the thing is that giving them that choices and then hearing that not an option or by yourself or with my help, it sticks, and it sticks quickly. They learn that you mean business when you say that. Yes. Otherwise we end up with the 4-year-old circular negotiators that just,
and
you keep going down the rabbit hole and you go like, how did I get here? And that is a difficult process to undo as they become 5, 6, 7, because they've learned that they can circular negotiate around you. And sometimes it is, sometimes things are negotiable, but when they are not, choices are still choices.
And it
pays you well when they're teenagers, because I have a story I always share. It happened with both of my children, who are 3 years apart in age. So two completely different times, shortly shy of their getting their driver's license age. Mm-hmm. They were at someone's home and I was going to come and pick them up. And they called me and they said, hey, you know what? You don't need to come until like 10:30 or 11. I'll get a ride home. And all I said across the phone was, I don't remember that being an option. And they said, okay, I'll be ready. Because I think in their brain, they had this picture of me going, your body shows me it needs my help. And I was going to march into the house and carry him out. And so if you teach it little, it sticks. It comes back. And it's that the kids have the right to say no. Yeah, they do have the right to say no. But they also need our guidance to help figure out when. So choices is always good. Presenting things as first, then. And always open-ended sentences is another way to help kids with finding their language. So when you're talking about something and they're having a hard time describing it, they're like, okay, it had something to do with at the park. So at the park today, Sammy... And then they fill it. Mm-hmm. And then it just helps them to kind of fill in. Also, when kids are first developing language, it super helps back to repeat back the little parts you do understand. So articulation, so speech sounds. So articulation is something we don't start to worry about until a child turns 3. So how clear their speech sounds are starts at the age of 3. Speech sounds develop up through the age of 7, so just shy of their 8th birthday. The first sounds kids get are sounds on our lips that they can see that are hard contact things, P, B, M, N, T, D. Then they start to learn airflow sounds, or back of their throat sounds, G, K, airflow sounds, F, S, V, S, H, C, H. Last sounds usually they get are like L and R and TH. TH is late. Those developmental norms, you can find them on websites, little graphs that show them. So, and any resources usually have them in it too. So what happens is that the general rule for a three-year-old, so someone who's using connected sentences, they're using little sentences and connected sentences. So someone between three and four is that someone who is with them all the time, the primary caregiver, probably understands them 80% of the time. Someone who sees them frequently but isn't with them all the time. So this is oftentimes grandparents, the next door neighbor. That person understands them about 50% of the time. Okay. And someone who hardly ever sees them, that's only like 20%. They're the person you're interpreting for all the time. Yeah. Younger or siblings who are not even necessarily near them in age, but within like a 5-year age span of them will always understand what they're saying. My philosophy is that it's not that long since they had all that sound system, that phonology in their head. So, sure. And their head is an awful of other stuff that they've had to learn. So they recognize what they say. So general articulation, that's just like the development of it. When to be concerned about articulation, especially in like threes and fours, is the primary kind of two things we see the most happening is they leave off the final consonant of words. So everything is a consonant vowel syllable, and they leave off the ending sounds of words on almost every word. And you can kind of tell because your brain, you're like, okay, you're saying words, but there's not enough information for me to fill in to figure out what the words you're sharing are. And it's just, you just know, it's hard. And they sound different. They don't have that cute, like, all, you know, a lot of little kids, 4-year-olds, you know, they wee wee white the yellow one, or they're going to be thick years old, and then they're going to be a big kid. You know, that typical toddler young kid talking. Yeah. But when there's not those consonants, there's missing information, that's to be concerned about. Okay. The other thing is when you hear a whole lot of insertion of just one or a couple sounds. So those early stop sounds tend to be the thing. So lots of T's and D's. And it kind of like, it sounds like they're just like, ta-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you're like, those are all real words you're saying, but I keep hearing these other sounds a lot. And it makes it hard to understand. Those are things that it would be worth it probably to consider having a speech evaluation done in the world of articulation. It is something that when kids go through three-year-old early childhood screening in all school districts, it's usually required starting at three, or it's recommended to start early at three. Sometimes I'm like, by 3.5, because a three-year-old, we don't expect them to do very much. So if you go right at 3 or 1 month, we may not catch anything going on, especially for speech and language. If you have other concerns, go early. But if it's just articulation, wait till they're closer to 3.5 and go through that screening. SIBS, like I mentioned, SIBS. Also, you have to be kind of careful for when talking about strategies, older siblings that talk for their younger siblings.
Yes.
I literally have had older kids who say, oh, I'll tell you what he's saying because he doesn't talk.
Yeah.
I'll just tell you what he wants.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, so what I do is I talk and I compare it to practicing. And I'll go, well, he does talk. He's just practicing. And then I try to find out something that I like, are you learning how to ride a bike, or do you know how to ice skate? And they'll be like, and I'll be like, well, you're just practicing. So she needs to just practice talking. And guess what? You're being a kid teacher. You're teaching him how to do it. And then I'm like, so then what I do is sometimes if the SIB is there, then I just practice with them and we'll do things like we'll read the book. And I'm like, okay, here's the deal. Everything on this page on this side, so I'll point to the left side, is what Joey's going to talk about. Every time we're on this page on the right side, you're going to talk about those things. And we're going to see how much Joey knows and that he's learned from you in this book. So then we go through and we look at the pictures and I label or I talk about, and younger sibling does some imitations. And if it's just this, you know, word approximation to it, then I go like, that I do go back to that reinforcing. You're right. They point to something, go, dog. I'm like, you're right. It's a dog. That dog is eating. And then talk about a few things. Now the older sib, they get to talk about whatever. When they want to kind of blurt and interrupt, I go, this is super important. I know you know this. because you're 4 years old. But I want you to keep it a secret. We're not going to say it. And we're going to see if Joey knows it. And yeah. so then the kids, they big siblings, they get super, especially if they're like kindergarten, first graders.
Sure, right.
They love having a secret.
I'm sure.
You're like, okay, keep it a secret. And sometimes I'll put my hand over my mouth, or I'll put up my finger, like, just wait. Or I refer to it, I like keep it in your thought bubble, and I draw a little balloon.
Yeah.
And then when I do this and I point, you know, some big actor cut scene, your turn thing,
Take some big gesture,
then I'm like, then you're going to tell him. If he doesn't get it, then I'm going to tell you and you're going to help him get it. So doing those things and helping those older sibs learn how to like coach, because they're like, he doesn't talk. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I can take care of this for you. I'll just jump to the end of the story.
And I always say, there are kids who are that efficiency model, younger siblings. That's great. Why would I go to work if I literally needed to do nothing because somebody else did all the work and I still got the paycheck at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Why? And there are those siblings who are like, it's great. He's doing all the talking. I don't need this. Yep. But then they're still not getting an opportunity to practice and learn language and add to their vocabulary and figure out that grammar. And I don't know that it delays them a lot. But we do want them to have that experiential language to be able to do those things.
Yes. And your example of the reading of the book with I'm just picturing a family, you know, getting ready for bed and having to do that. There's a lot of that kind of frustration on the part of the caregiver to say, the older child is always taking away the opportunity for my younger child to practice. And you've just given a great opportunity, a great example of how to split that up.
Right. And then Tulin, like playing, like, okay, we're playing with our whatever toys. You're going to tell me three things that you're doing with your toy. And then it's going to be Samantha's turn. And we're going to wait and see what she has to talk about. And even that's only just labeling it, making a play sound, asking for more, whatever, that's her talking about her play. So learning that turn taking and the give and take. And then sometimes if, you know, they say whatever, it is also sweet. I love when older siblings, when little kids get to the age of like where they're making little simple sentences or they can do multiple syllable words and the older sibling figures it out and they're like, say butterfly, say caterpillar, say alphabet. And they like turn them into this little like AI generator for multiple syllable complex words. They try to trick them and throw them off. And the little kid is just like, this is a great game. And I'm like, and then I'm just like, okay, that's great. You're being a super good kid teacher. But I think now her brain needs a rest because those are long words. Let's see which one she remembers all by herself.
But it's fun
to see it. Slowing your rate and leaving pauses. We've talked on and off a lot about just giving them a chance to process the information and prepare their response because they just need time to process what it is we just asked them to do and to come up with an answer. And you only have to give it, you know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Yeah. We've probably lost their attention, or if they're going to get it, they're going to get it within 10 seconds. Then go ahead and give them a choice. Give them open-ended sentence, give them some sort of a cue to what it is that you kind of want to have, help them find the words. Mm-hmm. And then when I was talking about choices too, I forgot to say, you can take things like labels from snack things or pictures offline or whatever and take and show them to them. And I've even sometimes like mounted them on the refrigerator, mounted them on the cupboard. So when they go over and they point to that picture, then you're like, oh, you're telling me you want goldfish, you know, and you just have a couple of them, but it becomes like a visual menu. So for those kids who are late talkers or who are delayed talkers, we're giving them a visual support to help be able to find their words.
Yes.
And we know, because then we're not just working from ground zero. You know, you can start out with taking out the actual container and they point to the one, but then if it's something that's pretty consistently something you offer, then cut the label off. You know, you could just go on to, you know, ads online or whatever. Now it's coming around to the holidays. You know, cut out pictures of Legos, cut out pictures of a truck, of a toy, things like that. And then present it to them as something that's a visual support so that you're like, what should we play with? Do you want to play with your train or with your Legos? You've just got this really easy picture that's an access there that they can point to. And then when they point to it, same thing. You're like, oh, you're telling me you want Legos. Can you say Legos? Yes. And then whatever they vocalize, even if it doesn't sound like Lego, you say, great, you're right. Lego. Legos.
Nice. And that's ideal, I think, when you think about the childcare setting, whether it's a family childcare home or a center-based situation, to have that educator be able to do that to support that child's language in their group. And also at home, as you're noting, just on the fridge. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a super complex. I mean, yeah, do we use symbol systems and do we use augmentative communication devices for kids that we find that just planning speech is hard for them and having that output? And that too, I'll just say that if your child does end up and someone recommends an augmentative communication device, they do not keep children from talking. A child will talk at the same time or sooner with an augmentative alternative communication device as they are on their own timeline. It's the same with using sign language. Those little ones, when they're just starting, if everybody learns and figures out the sign for more, for want, and for all done, and maybe eat, that's pretty much, once you get them through those basic signs, then the words usually start to come, but they do help. Giving them gestures for something, it's a support that we know connects neurologically to their talking brain, and it's a motor movement that sometimes see it do. It could do that motor sign, and it helps that verbal language come. It doesn't hold them back. Talking to them in multiple languages does not confuse them, does not hold them back. Be multilingual with your child if you're a multilingual family. It is something that we know gives them whole brain growth, and actually research recently shows that it not only helps them for language, for reading and linguistics, it also helps them for things like strategic thinking, like in math, something that we would never have thought, but because they become whole brain learners. Yes. Multilingual kids learn how to use different parts of their brains complexly, all interwoven at the same time, and it helps them for learning. So they are not things that will confuse them or hold them back. Any of those things help them support their language.
Fabulous. Oh, Cindy, this has been so interesting, and I'm just excited for our listeners to have all this information. Thank you so much for spending time with us on these multiple episodes, and I look forward to having you back again and some other topic. You're a wealth of knowledge on so many things, and it's just been a treat to have these times with you, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much, Cindy McEnroy.
It's been wonderful to share it with you. And I always tell everybody that, you know, you are all wonderful communicators with your families and with your children. Everybody has different kind of communication styles, and every one of our children has this little personality in there that's got to be, you know, unlocked. And language is just this wonderful, small little key to help unlock it and to find out what's going on in that little brain and how I can share and be exciting with it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And if you want more information about this or the other episodes that were the precursors to this one, you can go to inclusivechildcare.org and find it in our podcast tab. Thank you, Cindy McEnroy. And I look forward to talking to you soon.
Yep, I do too. Joy and best wishes to everyone. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.